This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
All right, we're in conversation now with playwright, scriptwriter, filmmaker, producer, and as you can hear there, lyricist and poet, Dumakan Ndlovu, really presenting the poem over the Jimmy Lulu song, River of Lost Dreams. He recites the poetry in the song. So an artiste in every sense of the word. And whilst we know Dumakan Ndlovu for bringing us just the magnificent story that is Mubango and all the mega egos in that telenovela, he's come up with a new incantation and the story of Queen Mujaji. And in this particular production, the very first of the Rain Queens. I know that in this generation, we are observing the life of the fifth Rain Queen, but the predecessors and how this woman of the Balobedu, who is said to have these mystical rain-making powers, ascends to the throne. And she reigned between the years 1800 to 1854. So quite a long, prominent, prolific reign. And a story that's very much entrenched in the northern part of South Africa and even beyond that, all the way through to where her origins come in Mono Motapa. My understanding is that one of the stories, at least, is that an old chief in the 16th century believed that one of his descendants would be impregnating a woman who would then birth this mystical figure. Anyway, I think Dumakan Ndlovu knows the history better than I do, and he's written the story, and it's now come to fruition. As you said, Dumakan Ndlovu, almost 30 years later, you finally are bringing the story to life.
Get to tell the story. So thank you. Thank you very much, Lerato. And greetings to all the Power listeners. I am honored to be invited to come and talk about this exceptional story. I'm a lover of African stories.
Yeah.
I'm an observer of life, and I've always thought that we Africans are not telling enough of our stories while we're busy trying to emulate everybody else, while we're busy revering the queen or princess so-and-so, and when Charles becomes king and stuff like that. When we have amazing stories in our own continent, stories that started fires, stories that basically ignited, transformed the clouds. And we've got amazing stories because we have always been in touch with the spirits and God. And this, for me, is an honor to be able to tell this story because it's an amazing story.
Okay, what you were telling us off air is that actually you already had started the research 30 years ago.
More than 30 years ago,
you already had observed the bloodline, the lineage of the various rain queens, how it came to be, as you say, stories that forge nations, ignite the clouds. Yeah. But South Africa wasn't ready to hear it 30 years ago. And suddenly they are in 2020.
I think so. And I think, and thank to Mzansi Magic, who started the whole thing with Shaka Ilembe. Mm. And of course, we saw how everybody got excited. And then I said to myself, maybe this is the right time to tell Queen Mujaji's story. So when you talk about Mono Motapa, when you talk about the Mapungubwe, when you talk about that whole era, you're talking about black people descending from, the immediate place is the Congo, but they came as far afield as Ethiopia, the black Jews, and that whole movement of the people coming down. We run into people in Mono Motapa, a group of people called the Karangas, who are still very much alive today, who are still very much a power force today, because the Karangas then give birth to more than four distinct groups. The Shonas are still the dominant Karanga lineage, the Vendas, and the Balobedu. So when they start splitting, going different directions, I then become fascinated by this one particular person. This man, his name is Mambo Mugodo, he's a king, who comes from a small faction of the Karangas that were the rainmakers. Remember that all of us had our different functions. Their function was to make rain. So they would give rain to everybody. If they liked you, they would give you rain. So I'm imagining
you're facing a drought.
If this young man was a prince and he's proposing to a girl, he'd say, I'll give you rain. Hey. You know. But Mambo Mugodu then falls afoul of the ancestors and they take away the rainmaking powers from him. So for about 20 years, there's a drought, not only in his kingdom, but around the area, because he then can no longer make rain because of some messing up that he did. Then eventually a prophecy comes to him and says, your sons are going to rise against you. He had 10 sons and one was just a few days away. The prophecy says, kill your 10 sons. Mm. Now, as patriarchal people and Africans, when you kill all your sons, who's going to take over from you?
Your family name, yeah.
Yeah, then he does. He kills all 10 of them. The one who is born is whisked away by one of his daughters. Then the prophecy comes back again because he thinks there's going to be rain. Then there's no rain. They say, sleep with your favorite daughter.
Ah!
Exactly. Now, the story becomes hugely fascinating. I mean, I'm using fascinating, educated, because it says, we are now transforming the kingdom into a queendom. Now, your people are going to be ruled by a frontal skirt. But in order for that to happen, you have to sleep with your daughter. We will then give her the rain-making charms, and then the Balobedu will go back into being rain-making people. Now, you can imagine that chaos. And, of course, that's the story we tell when somebody comes and says, sleep with your favorite daughter. He tries to talk to his favorite daughter, but he can't bring himself to that. He then sleeps with his least favorite daughter. And then she falls pregnant and she gives birth to a baby boy. He has to kill the child because he's defied the ancestors. They're punishing him. So he goes back to the least favorite daughter. They sleep again. She gives birth to a baby girl. And her name is Maselegwane. And on the day she is born, it rains. Now, this is a true story. She then grows up. 18 years later, she becomes Queen Mujaji. On her installation, it then rains and the drought is broken. And she starts dispatching rain just like that. And she becomes the most effective king in the Southern Hemisphere. At one stage, King Shaka, who was the most dominant one, sends his troops to Bulobedu to go and ask for rain. They come back, and as soon as they arrive back in Zululand,
it rains.
So such was the power of this woman. She grew her kingdom into the most powerful, not by bloodshed, not by fighting people, but just by making rain.
Right.
She became also mystical and magical because if people started going to visit her. So you would sit in a meeting with the queen and talk endlessly. And a few days later, you discover that you are not talking to the queen because she never met people. She would send her emissaries. She'd go. Oh,
so all
she
these
had,
proxies.
She had 52 wives.
Okay, can I stop you there?
Yes.
Because as you tell the story,
you need to breathe.
Yeah, we need to breathe, and I need to process. First, I need to process the incestuous, the issue you've said, and you've also qualified it. It was born of a prophecy. He defied the prophecy. So in the end, if he wants to save the nation and he wants to end the drought, exactly, he must fulfill the prophecy, as unpalatable as it is. But as you explain Queen Maselegwane Mujaji and her reign-making powers, and that at 18 she's installed a queen, you then stop using the word queen and start using she becomes the most powerful king.
Well, it was from kingdom to queendom.
Right.
So we use the word interchangeably, but not in the story, but just basically because as a historical procession, we never really had a queen. The queen was the queen mother, the mother of the king. But this time around, she becomes the ruler. And I always liken her to Queen Mkabayi Gajama, who was Shaka's aunt,
yes,
who for about 18 years was the king of the Zulus, because she was on the throne.
Yeah.
And when you say, because I'm Zulu, when you go and talk to Mkabayi, you say, Bayete. You then don't come with a salutation that is gender specific.
Yeah.
Exactly. And of course, the legend has that Mkabayi used to dress like a man, and she was just the most powerful. So when we use those terms interchangeably, it's not because we want to diminish or whatever. It's
right.
Just what we want to say. If you think kings are the biggest thing, she was on that same level. Exactly.
Okay. I can work with that. Okay, so the term king is not born of patriarchy. Well, it is, but it's not born of patriarchy in that it is the ultimate authority.
So the
and
name
so,
king,
and so we say she's a king as the ultimate authority.
The name king comes from the from. So God needed a representative on earth.
Yeah.
God being the king, and then he installed kings to look over us.
All right. No, that's fine. I'm not about to have a whole gender conversation. I just needed to understand that because you mentioned patriarchy, dismantling patriarchy, a queen who becomes king. So I just needed for us to understand what it is that we are talking about. Now, in the television drama, you're focusing almost exclusively on this period in the 19th century, 1800 to 1854. 54. The story of the very first reign, queen's reign, king. Why?
There's so much to tell. There is so much to tell, number one. And number two, I think, interestingly, as a society, all of us, when we think of Queen Mujaji, of the reign queen, we think of nothing says to us there's been six.
Others,
There's been six people.
Yeah.
So when we just say the reign queen, in our minds there's just one person.
Yeah.
So we thought that let's pay tribute to this one person, the first person.
Yeah.
There's something, Osley Rato, that happens to me as I go through the story now, as I break it down. I then am forced to look at Masele Kwane as a human being.
Mm.
As this sorry child, there's a scene. So she doesn't know her mother. She knows this woman. This woman is part of the royal family, but she doesn't know it's her mother.
Because it could be her sister.
It's her mother and also her sister. Because remember that the king slept with his daughter. So one day she asks her aunt, Kadikuluri, why does this woman hate me so much? And Kadikulu tries to dismiss her. But eventually, Kadikulu has to tell her that this is your mother. Mm-hmm. And you see this child seeing her mother for the first time, seeing her as a mother.
Not as
And not as this woman, this thing. Then down the line, she then is told that she's also your sister. So you see a human being that, you know, as a story maker, as a filmmaker, I'm dealing with this whole incestuous thing as a story, as a dramatic thing. But then I'm forced to look at the story, at human beings.
Mm.
This child who had to go through all of this. And she has to be the most powerful ruler in the nation. Mm. Because you see her fighting the Indunas who cannot accept her. And she has to send them to be killed and all of those kinds of things. She's this powerful person. Mm. She's this mythical figure.
Mm.
But then you see her as a child who just didn't know her mother.
Yeah.
You know, amazing story.
And that's the universality, I think, of stories like this. Because as you started off, you said, you know, we're so fascinated and enamored with stories of kingdoms born everywhere else in the world. What about the sacrifices, the adversity that births kingdoms around us, you know?
Mm.
But to all of them, whether we're talking Queen Elizabeth I, the first woman to be queen in Britain, also at a young age, and how many people had to die before she could ascend the throne, because the father had married so many women, and there was, you know, just chaos. And many, many stories. I think we underestimate what it takes to consolidate a nation and a country.
The challenge that we have, all of us, Lerato, including you, the broadcasters, is for us to force to go into a mind shift where Africans understand the role of a woman in an African perspective from time immemorial, historically, not now.
Mm.
What does it mean? This term mother, what does it mean? To mother, what does it mean? Because, again, I don't want to take you back to the king and queen. We've always thought of a queen as somebody's wife.
Mm.
So now this is a person who is not somebody's wife. She actually has wives. She actually has wives, you know. So there has to be a mind shift for us as Africans. That also will change the narrative in us telling stories. I have tried in my work to put a woman in a place where they are not subjugated, they are not second fiddle. But because I was raised by a very strong woman, I was raised in a society of very strong women, whether it was my grandmother, whether it was my mother, whether it was my mother's sisters, whether it was my father's sisters. I've always been surrounded by these strong women, including my daughters, including the people that I live around, you know. So I think we do need to go through that mind shift as Africans.
Okay. What I've learned by hosting a culture corner, which we have every Wednesday, and I've learned it in the 2 years that I've been here, is that you know, the concept of patriarchy actually is imported, one, into African cultures and linguistics. It comes and starts to feature the idea of men as rulers, I've learned on this show, is something that starts to filter in perhaps around the 17th century or so with the colonial story, those clashes. And that if you go into ancient African traditions, even the traditions of Kush in Egypt, Nubia, the reason why women pharaohs or women ruled with the pharaohs is because they were seen as the closest thing to the sun, as in the sunshine. And if you read hieroglyphics or if you study ancient Arabic texts, you would know that. That's why Ethiopia had the most powerful queen and Sheba. Subsequently many different queens after the queen of Sheba, Makeda, through to Zaiditu. It's because women were seen as rulers closest to the sun. So all of that gets bastardized, I've learned, with the colonial input.
When you look at African spirituality, African societies, the woman is always at the center of power. Whether you're talking about Nomkhulwana in the south, who we have totally forgotten and don't even know what she represented, or you talk about Yemanya in the Yoruba culture, was the goddess of water, or you're talking about, they talk about Horus as an exported figure who is actually, who has actually stolen. And his mother, in society, the spirituality, the centrality of spirituality is a female figure. In Zulu society, in Nguni society, when you had three wives or seven wives, you couldn't sleep with them. It was the first wife who controlled that timetable. You go and sleep over there now. She's in her cycle. You all know you go and sleep. It was the woman who controlled all of that. And all of these things have gone to the dogs. We don't understand it, so because it's a man. It has never been like that. Our society has always been.
So as you tell the story of Queen Mojaji, the Rain Queen, the Queendom, how do you bring about all these themes? How much of the story has your poetic license to try to locate in her story and experience the themes of 2024?
So, first of all, you're telling a historical piece.
Yes, a biographical thing.
And then I'm sure you've seen the noise.
Yeah.
Then, of course, everybody wants to own it.
Yeah.
First of all, it is the viewers. For me, the viewers have been telling me who to cast. I mean, every day they tell me you have to cast so and so. They have ownership. So there is this Balobedu society that has been suppressed. They go to school and learn in Sipedi. They've never been given a chance to learn in their own language.
Yeah.
So for them, this is their opportunity. So I have to respect them and give them their place in the sun.
Okay.
So there's an element, maybe 20%, maybe more, that becomes fictionalized because we need to fill the gaping holes. And that's why I think you'll hear my voice and the voice of the writers, the amazing writers that I've been working with. We've created certain characters just to boost that and to bring not the modernity, but the humanness and the relatability, because the story has to be relatable. So I think you will hear our voice, you'll hear the voices of the writers as we're going in the other fictional characters that we've brought in.
And then finally, when you talk about the language, you know, I only learned that Bulubedi is a language in itself, a culture in itself. I probably only learned that about 8 months ago, you know. So the authenticity of telling the story when a language and a people have been suppressed, how challenging has that been?
It is very challenging, but we have to remind people that we are not we're not creating a dictionary. We're bringing back a language that needs to be relatable.
Yeah.
We need to also be relatable.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a mixture of the traditional old language and the words that have seeped in since.
And the costumes?
Oh my goodness, I'm going to leave it to your imagination. I think you need to see, it's the most exciting part for me in the film.
Yeah.
The wardrobe. And I just, call me when you see the first episode and tell me what you think. I think the wardrobe is going to stun everybody. Our challenge has been not to look Nguni, not to look Zulu, and I think we've done a stunning job.
Okay, and as we say goodbye to you, this is perhaps now, I mean, you've done a lot of work, but this is perhaps your second of the groundbreaking cultural productions. The second time you say to South Africans, hang on, there's a lot more. to the country than what we would know. It was felt like Mubango was the
groundbreaking.
The groundbreaker for the Venda and the Tsonga communities, who, for all intents and purposes, had always been denigrated. And you gave them a prominence, and you're doing exactly that now.
Last year we did Komkhulu, which was the first isiNdebele story on television. Gosh. So this is the third
one. Okay, yeah. Sorry, my apologies. Okay.
I'm not gloating. I can't forget the Ndebeles.
But what drives you?
I'm an African through and through. Mm. I'm an African. When I came back, I lived in the United States for 15 years, and I think you've got an experience all over the world as well. When I came back home, I wanted to tell African stories. I was tired of all of those stories. So I'm an African. I became more African than the Africans in here because I just wanted to tell African stories.
And you're doing it so well. We can't wait. There's been a lot of fanfare around the queendom, the Queen Mujaji story. Some of the cast members have been cast post regularly online to say, I'm going to play this part, as Dumagan Dlovu says. And then people in South Africa, particularly around that Tzaneen belt, feel like, excuse me, we want input in this. And then ultimately, we're going to see what comes up. But we are just seeing a reawakening, and we're excited, and we thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm excited and nervous, but thank you for having me.
Yay, there we go. Okay, it's news time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.